This is an ABC podcast.
Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mula, I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected. And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They're on the ground letting us all know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about.
On today's show, storytelling. Every culture has their way of doing this and their reasons. We'll hear how someone's passed down important cultural information to their young people.
Also, from the Pacific to Cyprus in the Middle East, why there's Pacific representation there and what outcome they're hoping for in relation to oceans. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
When we think about things that we've learned, chances are the things that we actually remember the most were taught to us via stories. Do you remember hearing cultural stories when you were younger, Joe?
Obviously, yes, Fred. I clearly and vividly recall humble beginnings, the time when I was growing up in a village with my grandparents. I usually spent most of my time during my childhood days with them. And they used to share, and you know, the stories they would, especially after school, after dinner, when we usually sit around the mat and just lying down, watching the moon outside, and they would share some tales and important stories about how things have progressed over the years, especially the experiences during their time, in the 70s, 80s.
And so when you would do that, when you would lay down on the mat and they would tell you stories, is that something that, like, you would do every night, and is it something that you would sort of look forward to as well as a young person?
Yes, absolutely. I would, if I, you know, after school, because the school was right next to my village. After school, I will just go home. I'll just put on my casual clothes, do some household chores. Do some household chores, bath, dinner. And then the most important time where I used to chat with my grandparents before I go back to my parents' house, to our family house, to study before.
And what sort of age are we talking about? Like sort of primary school here? Like, so I guess maybe 10 years old, possibly?
Yeah, I was in year one, year two, year three, year four when my grandfather passed on. And then year eight when my grandmother passed on as well. So, yeah, I miss them so much. But, you know, the stories, their legacy still lives on, you know, in terms of trying to relate whatever they told me back then to the current situation, especially when we deal with climate. And that was one of the motivating factor that prompted me, or, you know, encouraged me to continue to know more about this issue of climate change and how, you know, the relationship between traditional knowledge in dealing with climate related issues. And, you know, they would talk about, okay, there's an animal, there's a small insect here. It's coming in big numbers. So that's an indication that a cyclone or a bad weather is approaching. You know, that's something that they've learned. It's like an information or the practice passed down from generation to generation. And when I was still a kid, I took it for granted. But when I became, progressing further to secondary and to high school, I became to realize that, okay, the concept, all those traditional concept and science that my grandparents once told me, are actually effective, or it happens. So when we see like bats,
you got some validation for it, I guess.
So when we see some sort of like bats or birds, you know, flying in groups from one place to the other, or one location to another unusual location, then that's one of the signs that, you know, cyclone is approaching. You know, it's really interesting, and you know, I take my hats off to my grandparents and my humble upbringing in the village.
Probably something that'll never leave you, too, those stories.
That made me really aware of, you know, and appreciate cultural stories and how crucial it is right now when we are dealing with these climate-related issues.
Pacific Prepared spoke with the Director of Samoan Studies at the National University of Samoa in late 2023.
And, you know, we wanted to find out more about how stories are used to teach young people about traditional knowledge and how exactly this process was done.
My name is Matayao Matiu, Dr. Matavaitautunu, Director of the Center for Samoan Studies at the National University of Samoa.
What sort of understanding have you got around traditional knowledge? And just broadly speaking, how is traditional knowledge generally handed down to people?
Traditional knowledge in Samoa is a very crucial things that pass from generation to generation, you know, by our ancestors, you know, like the arts, you know, of for example, how we peeled poles for their traveling, and also the navigation, and by using, you know, the tide and also the winds, the weather, and you know, they applied their traditional knowledge of how they peeled the different kind of canoes and boats that, you know, relevant to different weathers, you know. And also their knowledge of counting, you know, the sea and the weather, based on their traditional knowledge, connecting with the moon and also the sun and also the stars. You know, there are specific seasons that our ancestors passing their traditional knowledge to the young generation. That is the a specific kind of weather and wind for you know, that kind of fish. You know, that they go fishing at that specific time. They also use their traditional knowledge to navigate and, you know, depend on the type of seasons. Like, you know, for example, when we came across the season, especially this season when we are waiting for the palolo, so we had a knowledge from our ancestors that counting the seven nights after full moon, then they counted the seven nights. So the seven nights and the other the next day, that will be the time to get the palolo.
What's the palolo? What's that?
The palolo is just the kind of worm fish that, you know, we fish it twice a year, in October and November. It's come from the corals, you know. I think that's the offsprings from the corals every year.
Yeah.
So it's people pass their knowledge of saying that in October, it is the most of the palolo will get from Savai Island. But for November, that is the palolo season, specifically for Upolu Island. But there are a few and changes based on the you know, the changes nowadays, especially when we came across the climate change,
yeah.
You know, when people were using the paraquats and they're using plant roots to catch fish, and also it's make it a coral to die out, you know, in the sea. And that's why we hardly, some of the specific village that they always get big palolo every year. We are no longer get it nowadays. In this area of Tuamasanga, ran from Lauli'i to Malua and Tufulele. So we cannot fish the palolo from this Tuamasanga village, Tuamasanga districts, and some of the villages in Samoa, because you know, remember the climate change when we use Matau to build our wharf. So that's why some of the scientists that we were discussing, that's the main reason why the palolo is no longer get from this area in Samoa, due to the work of people and also the climate change.
Are there specific methods that Samoans using to pass down traditional knowledge? Like, is there a certain, you know, a certain way that they're doing it, or is it just happening through life? Is it just something that happens naturally as life goes on?
Yes, that traditionally, that that is a role of our parents as our first teachers in the family. So at night, they ask their young kids, grandkids, and to you know, do the what they want expect to do, but at night they're telling the whangongos. The whangongo is the story tellers, and also the fairy tales, and also the stories that they tell us, the oral traditions and oral histories, you know, like myths and legends. Yeah. So that's the way of passing the knowledge from generation to generation through the word of mouth. Yeah. You know, and that was the methodology that our ancestors and parents were passing to the young generations, you know, through the word of mouth, is telling the, you know, that kind of myth and legends of Samoa. You know, that's past the history, not only the history, and also explaining the origin of, you know, the village name, and also with the mountains in the village, the rivers, you know, and also a specific land in the village, you know, rivers and, you know, pools in the village. So every rivers, pools, and every village in Samoa has, you know, we call it Measina. Measina is something that very important in the history of the village. So our ancestors will pass that story to the young generation through the word of mouth. So and also they considered it as a reward to the kids by doing what they were expected to do. Like, you know, tidying the house, you know, collecting the rubbish and that sort of things. But at night, that's the rewards to give to them, is to tell them the oral traditions, oral histories, and also the myth and legends about Samoa.
Thank you. Matthew, talking about traditional knowledge, I recall in many years back in Samoa, whenever we see birds called atafa, it means there will be a cyclone coming. Why we take this sign, these birds as a sign of cyclone? Is this traditional knowledge passed from our ancestors?
During navigations, it's depend on the, you know, the when we see the birds like atafa, it tells us that there will be a cyclone coming. You know, different kind of winds like la'i and tuha oloa, and also la'i tonga ole si'ua mouli. So the different winds in Samoa, and also the different directions, you know. So that's why when the tuaoloa is the a wind, the direction from eastern side of Samoa to the western side. So when we see that, that's the time that connected with the people believe that when that a wind blew out at that time. So the eastern side of Upolu Island strongly believe that, that the wind for that damaged the people's skin, and also let the people die. You know, that, and then we when we when the la'i, the direction of the la'i from the west to the east, so that's make the coconuts and also the plants and also animals that, you know, before ilele wa mo fa alanga ina yo la to tin to ulwai fo la au. So it relate, it's the great relation of the action of birds when we saw them at the this specific time of the year, especially in the beginning, the time of the wet season, cyclone season in Samoa, from October to April every year. So that we'll see most of the tafa.
If you've just joined in, thank you so much for listening in to the Pacific Prepared Program. This is Matau, Dr. Matabai Tautunu, Director of Samoan Studies at the National University of Samoa.
Thank you, Matiu. You know, most of the times in Samoa, when it is raining, and if there is a cruise ship at the wharf, people always believe that there is a reason why it is the reason why it is raining. Where does that come from? What is your understanding of this knowledge?
Yes. You know, at that time of the weather, we think of the story of about Semalama Mailangi, you know, si omia litioai so na lalilei o na si omia o e matamatangi umo Samoa. So all the winds of Samoa that are protecting you, that's a oral tradition about the taupo of the tota of the tuiatua in Alipata. That's why we call Alipata o le matamatangi. So pe it's connect fa pe ngai o roingo mai ba atetele mo mai pe foi lele e ao mai ai ia taavilinga o matangi.
So there's an oral tradition when the two manayas of Faleata went to Alipata to find the taupo, you know, the virgin taupo of the daughter of the Tuiatua to be his wife. And then when they saw the taupo, the virgin sat in front of the house and they say, oh, litioa a elalilei. Nei si omia o e mata o matang. Maybe all the point of the winds, discovering her. And, you know, that's why she became very beautiful, you know. And then we strongly believe that this kind of idea that all the winds were, that's flew from the west, from the east to the west. Our history and our story is the story of the east. The creation of Samoa originated from Manu'a Island, from the eastern side of Samoa. That's why when cruise ship came at this side, all the winds, that's the story I heard when we conducted our research, Some of the villages, they have their own signs of weather and tide. In my village, every time there is a tua'oloa, strong winds, it means someone will die, and it becomes true. What is your understanding of these signs, where it began?
I came from Alipata, and Alipata, as I mentioned, that Atua ran from Leusoli to Falealili, and we... this only the strong wind only tua olua always say ya fangi itu poile me fa pia as in Alipata once the we have a sign of tua olua when the big wave hit the rocks and then the sound of the hit of the collision that make people thought that maybe next week will be the tua olua and then people will are still aware of the strong wind will and they all aware because they fear of the tua'oloa because people will die from there from as a sign of the tua'oloa but the oral traditions and the story behind that so I have no idea
how do you feel about traditional knowledge being passed down in sort of 5, 10, 20 years, do you think that tradition of passing down knowledge is still quite strong, in your opinion?
It's very strong when the traditional knowledge passed down through the words of mouth and also, but there are few changes. When we see the Samoan people practice, traditional practice nowadays is, there's a big change of the like how we serve, you know, when traditional knowledge passing to the people of how they go fishing. There are specific villages in Samoa that they have their own fish that they look after based on their oral tradition. Like, for example, the Luatuanu'usi Anai, the we call it mallet from Luatuanu'u village. So there is a specific tautai, you know, the fishermen in the village that they, that, you know, tangaloa, the Samoan traditional god, gave them, you know, the roles of catching the fish, and but now there's a big difference.
Right.
When people sell the fish to get money, and also you know, like the traditional practice that the that's the village and the community a role of all together go and get fish and distribute among people and families in the village, but now they sell out for money, and that change, as I mentioned before, that make the, you know, now they no longer get their fish. Most of the villages that they have specific kind of fish, for example, they no longer get it nowadays because they use it to get money. They, you know, commercialize using of, you know, a lot of the and that sort of changes that I noticed, that, you know, the traditional practice and traditional knowledge, they pass from generation to generation, pass from their families into. Even like, for example, the tattoo. The tattoo is now spread to so many people. Even the Europeans, they got the Samoan tattoo because of that. That's the changes that made when the Europeans arrived in Samoa. But traditionally, their specific family, they have their own tattoo. You know, that's their ancestors' gift from Tangaloa. But now they distributed, and anyone can have a tattoo, and also they give their the tattoo equipments to some of their friends and people that work with them, and those people continue their work. So that's all the changes that made today.
And I mean, and you've got traditional tattoos on as well, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mean, yeah, must feel a bit strange to see somebody else with, you know, with a similar pattern on too.
Yes, and also I strongly believe that having a tattoo is something that, you know, that's your way to the how you're going to serve your family, your village, the community, and also your country. But the change that I recognize today, people having a tattoo and malu just to show them off, show off, and also just to wear as in something that, you know, tell the people that, you know, how strong he is and how, you know, instead of having a deep understanding of, you know, the role of people having a tattoo, and also the different meanings of the tattoo, a design, you know, having a link to the environment, and also their role that they practice in the community, and also the country, you know.
And also thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter from Samoa, Maui Lutamose, for her work on that story in late 2023.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
Joe, there's a meeting or a conference happening in the Middle East, and it's all about oceans, and there's also Pacific Island representation at the meeting as well.
Yes, yes, Fred, I noticed, you know, when we were traveling to Solomon Islands 2 weeks ago, and even coming to Noumea, New Caledonia now, we've noticed that, you know, there'll be some sort of delegation. We'll meet at the airport.
Ah, yeah, okay.
You know, and we'll ask them, okay, where are you guys going? Okay, we're going to the Ocean Conference, you know, happening in Barcelona. There was one in Barcelona, Spain,
yes.
That happened 2 weeks ago. And, you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
That all these important meetings, especially climate change, ocean, have been prioritized by these big giants, the big countries.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, when I did some readings and research about the conference or the ocean conference that was held in Barcelona, Spain, 2 weeks ago, I believe it's like a build up to the main one that will happen in 2025.
Yeah.
Just to kind of like cement or pave the way forward towards one of the sustainable development goals.
Yeah, I think they're just getting those conversations started, aren't they, really?
Yeah, of 2030, yeah. So, it'll be interesting what would be the outcome of the workshop or the meeting, the liberation from the participants, especially, I'm looking forward. It'll be interesting to hear the different aspects, different stories that will be shared by representatives from the region, from the Pacific Island nations.
Well, this meeting or conference or whatever that's sort of, however you refer to it, that's happening in the Middle East at the moment, they're talking about everything related to the ocean. So it's absolutely covering any ground that's related to oceans at all. And any country that's got an interest or a stake in the oceans, which is probably most of them, to be honest, will be there and have a seat at the table. So this is what ABC's Pacific Beat program on Radio Australia has been talking about recently.
The Pacific wants to come to these global events with a loud voice to ensure that the work it wants to do in the region and for all the ocean, because there is only one ocean, to make sure that our voices are heard, the challenges that we are dealing with every day are considered, and partners must get on board to support the work that we need to do.
What's the status in regards to international conservation targets of our oceans?
A lot of work remains to be done in terms of the global diversity framework, the push for 30 by 30 conservation targets. In fact, the Pacific leaders have even called for 100% management across the spectrum of oceans management, both internal exclusive economic zones, and not forgetting the importance also for consideration of traditional knowledge as part of the equation to support conservation strategies.
Thanks to ABC Radio Australia's reporter Dubravka Volada for that story.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Pacific Prepared. Thank you so much for listening. Joe, thanks for your help this week and insights all the way from New Caledonia.
All good, Fred. All good. And I'm currently in New Caledonia and we'll be back home over the weekend. And I'll talk to you from Fiji next week. Until then, as we say in Fiji goodbye, we say Mother Manda.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Joe. Vinaka.
Vinaka.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josina Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.